Welcome to PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. I'm here today with my good friend, Mr. Vin Forte.
I can only mean one thing.
It means it's Star Trek time.
Yeah, we're working our way through all the movies.
Let me give it a few seconds. My girlfriend has to turn the episode off.
Oh, okay.
Everyone, Jen's okay, not listening. Good. Oh, boy. No, I'm here with Mr. Vin Forte. You know him from Oddball with Vin Forte.
And Wrestle Rap.
And Wrestle Rap with Emilio Sparks. And Vin Forte, is your name?
Nope. I am the co-host, but it's Emilio. Yeah, it's just Wrestle Rap, and it's Emilio Sparks' baby.
There's no featuring?
There's no featuring.
There's no hammer and introducing Vin Forte as the second leg.
No, I am not. There's no Hootie and the Blow. I'm not the Blowfish. Yeah. I'm not, like, it's all Sparks, baby.
Okay. How is Oddball going?
It's going good. Go subscribe over on youtube.com/@oddballpodcast. There's some stuff up there now. It's Thanksgiving season.
Mm-hmm.
Just passed by the time you're hearing this, but there's stuff up about the turducken.
Nice.
And Baskin-Robbins Turkey Day ice cream.
Oh, I did not hear about that.
Oh, this is... You better run this weekend and get it before it's out.
Oh, boy.
Thanksgiving is over. So... It's their turkey fixins ice cream.
All right, I'm liking what I'm hearing.
It's a combination of three things.
Okay,
sweet potato. It's like a base.
Sounds good.
Cornbread pieces.
That sounds awesome.
And like cranberry swirl.
That sounds pretty good.
It is. It's good.
Yeah.
It's not like an everyday thing where you're like, wow, I hope this is on the menu all year round.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like worth a try. It was a little more savory than I was expecting.
Interesting.
Like, it had, like, almost like a thyme kind of flavor, like a stuffing.
Interesting.
Sort of spice to it. It was very interesting.
We should just go get some right now.
Yeah, fuck that. Fuck Star Trek. Yeah, maybe we should go to the drive-thru and just interview people.
Like, yeah. So what do you think about Undiscovered Country?
I was going to say the ice cream, but not. Believe me, the people at Dunkin' Donuts do not want to get interviewed at anything.
That's true. Well... We are here once again with the Star Trek series. We're at the last of the film starring the original series crew.
Yeah.
TOS, those old scientists. Mm-hmm. It is the first Star Trek movie in the 90s, baby.
Yeah.
The Rocklin 90s.
What?
I have no idea.
The Rockford
like.
File 90s?
The Rockling? The Rocking? Rollicking. That's better.
It was almost like a Flintstones word you were trying to.
Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
Not the Final Frontier, which you would think would be the last one.
Right, for which I always confuse the two.
Yeah.
It's not. It's this. But the Final Frontier, which we did an episode of, the original series and the first five movies. Final Frontier was kind of a drag.
Yeah, not good.
Not great. Not a good time at the movies. But this movie.
This movie is great.
I think there's a home run.
Absolutely. This is like, if people don't say that Wrath of Khan is their favorite, it's usually this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this one, even more than Wrath of Khan, because Wrath of Khan, like, this kind of does what the inverse of Wrath of Khan does. Uh-huh. So Wrath of Khan takes an old episode... like something from the Star Trek canon, and brings like new life to it.
Yeah.
Whereas this one is taking something in the Star Trek canon, like the Klingons, and like moving it forward.
Yeah, it's really, if you had to be like, what's the last story for this crew?
This
I feel like this
it.
Is a really good, because it creates a huge political difference.
Yeah, it's like it's basically like their take on the Cold War. And like
right,
the
and the end of
down.
The Cold War. Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, it kind of... We've already had Next Gen on, so it kind of will lead to the world where you have a Klingon there on the crew.
Right, it definitely... This is the movie where it definitely feels like, aesthetically, they're, like, catching up to Next Gen. Like, they're using a lot more assets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, from the Next Gen. You could see in, like, some scenes... like eagle-eyed viewers have spied that they use like different sets from the Next Gen, but with like people in the foreground and like stuff blocking certain things.
Yeah, I think it's a very good looking movie.
Yeah,
it's directed by Nicholas Meyer, who directed Part Two, which is like you said, many people say that's their best one or their favorite one. He is a very competent filmmaker. This is coming off the heels of the one Shatner directed, which was not very good. Apparently, Now, I know a lot of trivia from the IMDb, so who knows how much any of that's true, but I think they wanted Nimoy again, but they were like, well, we can't because it's got to be equal between him and Shatner, so we'd have to do a seventh one just for Shatner. Because they had it in...
Shatner had like a favored nations clause.
Yeah.
Which basically in Hollywood terms means that if you give X persons certain privileges, you get those privileges too.
It's really snotty. It's like a little kid being like, but you gave it to him. Why can't I have it?
Right. Like if they did a movie and Leonard Nimoy's pay went up by $100,000, Shatner's instantly has to go up by that as well.
Right. The story is by Nimoy. The story credits are Leonard Nimoy, Lawrence Connor, Mark Rosenthal. The screenplay is by Nicholas Meyer and Denny Martin Flynn. And the composer is Cliff Eidelman, who I think does a good job. I like the score of this movie. It's got a sort of somber bittersweetness to it. The whole thing kind of has a bittersweetness to it.
Yeah, because again, it's like these people were old enemies and now they're trying to get along. And there's like sabotage. It's really... It is, the more I think about it, the more it is like, you almost can't think of any other more perfect way to end this movie franchise.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
And you get a little bit of everything, too. Like, there's intrigue, there's action, there's good political drama.
It's got political intrigue, action, humor, emotional stakes, character growth, conflict between Spock and Kirk. Every crew member has a moment. It's got a prison break. It's got Kirk kissing a pretty lady. Of color. It's got a Kirk versus Kirk scene. It's got
a hidden Worf cameo.
It's got a Spock mind meld. It's got everything, baby. It's got tons of Cold War references. It's got Christopher Plummer from The Sound of Music.
It's got Kurtwood Smith, for God's sake.
You bet it does. It's got David Werner not playing this character he played in the last movie, playing a different character.
Yeah, David.
He's in two consecutive movies.
He's in two movies and that memorable two-parter in Next Gen.
He plays a third character?
He plays a Cardassian that Picard gets kidnapped.
Okay.
It's the famous, I don't know if you've ever seen like this scene where a running through line is the guy David Warren tries to keep getting him to lie as a prisoner of war. So he'll show him four lights on the sky. Uh-huh. And he'll go, how many lights are there? And Picard's like, there are four lights. Every time he says there are four lights, he gets tortured.
Uh-huh.
Because David Warner wants him to say there's five lights.
Interesting.
David Warner's like, no, you're lying. It's five lights.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be this comment on like how torture really isn't effective, because if you're being tortured, you'll just say anything.
You'll say anything.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, supposedly we in that Zero Dark 30 movie, they present it as we got the information of where Osama bin Laden was from torture, but we didn't, actually.
Yeah.
We got very little from the waterboarding we did to people.
Again, because people just say anything. So
yeah. I started Chicago Fire. That was me. Whatever you want me to say to make this stop, I'll say.
Yeah.
So as you can tell, Vin is a real Star Trek fan. He's seen all of the series, all of the films. So a handful of the films, but as of this last year, I watched the original series, and now I've been making my way through it. So we come to it two different places. Me as kind of a newbie to the world of Star Trek, and Vin as an old hat.
Yeah.
Vin. Old yeah.
Trekker. Trekkie. Yeah. I never got that whole, like, first off, it's Trekkie. Like, I've never heard someone like...
Yeah.
Like, very rarely I've heard, like, oh, it's those Trekkers. Like, nobody...
Well, the weird thing was Trekkers are like, we're better than Trekkies. And it's like, what a weird...
Yeah.
Why? First of all, why? Second, like, why? Like, it's such a weird distinction that you would make. Like, no, I'm not a Trekkie. I'm not... Trekker. I'm a Trekker. I smash puss. Yeah. I feel like that's what they're trying to say. Like, I love Star Trek, and I know everything about it, but also, I smash puss.
Yeah, you're out there eating some Klingon gawk, and I'm eating some hot puss.
Exactly. And it's like, no, you know.
Well, I think, and this is something maybe we talk about after the fact, but like, because we've got the Next Gen movies coming up.
Yeah.
But there's only three more, so I think to even it out, we should do, next one would be First Contact and Insurrection.
Yeah.
And then I think to end it out, we, or of the Next Gen movies at least, we do Nemesis, but we also do the 1997 documentary Trekkies.
I would love to do an episode on Trekkies. Yes. Absolutely love to do an episode of Trekkies. That's, you know, like...
That was like the big nerd documentary. Like, before you had the internet to post, like, Comic-Con videos and all this shit. It was like, here's what, like, the hardcore fans.
Yeah, and I feel like it really opened up the world to the idea of fandom. Like, people outside of fandom was like, this is fandom. Which is, like, fandom is, I think, a much more accessible thing now. If you know, you could go online and kind of find your fandoms just randomly. But I think Trekkies was, like, the first, like, pulling the curtain back and being like, look at these people that, like, really infuse this stuff into their life.
Yeah, like, we're able to get online.
Yeah.
Like, early on and go on, like, bulletin boards and find communities and, like, know to go to conventions.
Because
even today with the internet, like, if there's a convention, like... within 50 miles, I have to, like, have an ad served to me to see it.
Sure,
and,
like, of course.
Know it's around.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, back then, it must have been even harder, but somehow they made it work where it was, like, they knew where the conventions were.
Yeah, I mean, you had conventions, you had fanzines, which you had to, like, sign up for because they were, like, you know, mailing lists. It was a whole, it was a very different, weird thing. By the way, this is a Star Wars anecdote, but I just saw someone posted online. I got it through the Star Wars fan page run by Ron Hill.
Okay.
And it's from a fanzine, of Star Wars fanzine, but it's their final issue, and it's the letter that they wrote because Empire Strikes Back came out, and it was such a betrayal to them, and they hated Empire Strikes Back so much that it's this long, vitriolic letter of how Empire Strikes Back is the worst thing ever, and if you like it, you're probably lying to yourself because it has no joy in it. And the caption for her posted it was like, toxicity in fandom is nothing new.
Oh, no, it's not new.
Because today I read it to Jen. I was like, what do you think they're talking about? They're not talking about The Last Jedi.
Yeah, they're talking about Palestine? What's going on?
They're not talking about anything important. They're talking about fucking what I think the average person would consider the best Star Wars movie.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Like,
it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, like that blows my mind.
But
everything eventually finds its audience. Like, even with Star Trek, like, in the 90s, Deep Space Nine was like the black sheep for a while.
Yeah,
because it was like you had Next Generation, then it was like, what's this weird serialized, like, they're not on a starship, they're on a space station.
Right.
Oh, there's too many characters, I can't really keep up. And then, like, you know, cut to even just a few years later, like, pretty soon after it went off the air, people were, like, rediscovering it.
Yeah.
And being like, this is the best. Now it's, like, widely regarded as, like, the height of Star Trek.
So interesting. People don't like difference. And right. I think what you see in fandom, and I myself am, of course, guilty of it from time to time, is an ownership belief over it. Like
all these people that are like...
You betrayed me.
Well, there's people even today that are like, oh, well, we should petition to get them to recut this movie or, like, film new scenes so it could be the movie we want it to be.
Right.
It's like... No, the moment happened already. Like, you could like it, you could not like it, but, like, what we're not going to do is go back and fucking recut this movie.
Right.
You won't know how
work. Or remake a movie.
Right.
Like, there were people that wanted to, like, literally, there was, like, a GoFundMe to, like, let's just do Star Wars Episode 7. Was it 7? No, 7, just Star Wars Episode 8 again and forget Last Jedi. It's like, that's not going to happen ever in a million zillion years. You fucking idiots. But it's this personal betrayal. It was just so funny reading this thing because it was like they love Star Wars A New Hope so much that they were like, we're going to make a fanzine all about it. And then Empire Strikes Back comes out and they're like, oh, no, this is not, I guess, what it was in their head another Star Wars would be. They're like, it's too bleak. It takes itself so seriously, which is an interesting point, which I can understand it a little bit. But I now live in the future where – that is part of the definition of Star Wars.
Right.
Sometimes it takes itself seriously. So that's the thing. It can't bend and move. Like, you got to allow it to bend.
Yeah, nobody ever likes the first change. It's like when, after that first 5 years when SNL changed cast.
Yeah.
And now that was a bad cast, but still, Like, they never, who's to say, like, if they gave that cast, like, 3 years to gel,
right,
that wouldn't have become something. But I, like, they didn't get that chance because people were immediately, like, this is not what I love.
Well, I think Saturday Night Live is an interesting case study because
everyone hates it until 10 years go by. And then they're like, oh, right. Remember when, like, even today.
And they love it when they're young. They love it when they're young. It's a perfect example of your entry to it is you think is the best. And then you hate everything comes after it. But it's. Like, or to really, a teen, no matter when you're...
Like, we've heard this our entire lives. Like, when I was in college and, like, Andy Samberg and Jason Sudeikis crew was, like, on SNL, people were like, oh, this is totally not, like, what I love.
Right.
And now, like, people are, like, pining, like, oh, we would love to have those guys back. Those guys are great.
Yeah. I remember being a kid... I didn't even know Saturday Night Live was still on. I thought it was just some old show that existed.
Because so my dad reruns on Comedy Central.
Yeah, yeah. And then one time I heard it was still on. I was like, "Oh my god, it's still on!" And my dad was like, "Nah, it's not good. It don't count." He was totally against it. Anyway, fandom. So Kim Cattrall's in this movie.
Yeah,
giving. I think if you only know her from Sex and the City. She's giving, and I'm not saying she's bad in this, but she's giving a good performance here. Like, I'm like, wow, she's really good in this.
Yeah, she's, as the kids say, serving cunt.
Is that what they say?
I don't know.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I just hear people saying it now.
Does it mean like she's like strong women, a bad like, bitch? Oh, okay.
Yeah, like she is serving cunt, honey. Mm, like,
oh, boy. Okay. Okay, we just earned our explicit tag. Yeah, she's great in it. So it was written that she was going to be the third actress to play Savick. And she was like, I'm not going to be the third person to play Savick.
Let's not do that.
By the way, the second person who played Savick was not even asked. They were just like, she was like, I would do it. Wasn't asked. So they were like, oh, okay, well, then we'll just rename it and you could be a new character. Which I understand for an actor why you would do that. You don't want to be the third person to play a character.
Yeah.
But from a story point of view.
It would have still worked.
It would have worked better because you would have really the betrayal that Spock feels at her, you know, machinations and you know, she's spoiler alert, she's one of the conspirators. Mm-hmm. It would have been so much deeper, but she ends up being this new character named Valeris. But she's good. She has this weird she has this weird Vulcan haircut where she has no sideburns.
Yeah,
it's a new look.
It's certainly a new look.
Yeah. It begins with for Gene Roddenberry.
Because he died right before the movie. Famously, Nicholas Meyers showed him a cut of the movie like a week or two before he died, and he like stormed out and hated it.
Right, of course. Well, do you know what he didn't like about it?
I think he just didn't. Gene Roddenberry's a weird guy.
He didn't like anything that wasn't his idea.
Well, he also... The weirdest part about Gene Roddenberry that I'll never understand is he did not like writing conflict into scripts.
Which is like what narratives are?
Yeah, like his whole thing is like...
I like nothing. He was the show about nothing before Seinfeld. Yeah, I want the show about nothing.
His whole thing is like Star Trek needs to be like we're perfect. We figured everything out. And like the conflict has to come from us going to different civilizations and like... The conflict's going on there, and we have to fix it.
Right.
Which is why, like, in the first season of Next Generation, the writers, a lot of whom he brought back, like D.C. Fontana and stuff, like,
yeah,
they were, like, trying tooth and nail to, like, get something going with these scripts.
Right.
And every time they came up with a good idea, Gene Roddenberry would, like, have his assistant, like, rewrite it.
Right.
To, like, take out the interpersonal conflict.
Take out the drama.
Yeah, exactly. Like, take out the drama. Or like, because there's a great example of this Next Gen where the second episode ever aired is a take on an old original series episode called The Naked Time.
Uh-huh.
And the new one's called The Naked Now. And in The Naked Time, it's the famous episode where the cast of the Enterprise, like they get infected with a weird whatever, and they all start acting like they're like, worst emotions.
Yeah.
Like Spock is way more emotional. Someone where Sulu is like shirtless and like fucking sword fighting.
Yeah.
But it works there because we've already known these characters for a while.
Right.
To have that be the second episode and to have the gist be, oh, these characters are acting so differently. It's like, well, we don't know them yet.
Right. That's such a weird second episode.
And not only did they not act differently, they were just like more, it was more like they were all just like sexual. Like they're all just like really hot for each other. Ooh. Like the virus made you really horny.
That's upsetting.
And it's like, so we're just making everyone horny? Like that's the famous episode where Data fucking has sex.
Oh, in the second episode.
Yeah, where Tasha is like, oh, are you anatomically correct? And he's like, oh, I am in every way. And then like,
oh, boy. She
brings him into the bedroom and it's like, this is weird.
This is, but it's got Jim Honore's stamp of approval.
Yeah, it's like, I thought this was a kid's show or something. Like,
yeah, and you know, and then the things that he seemed to hate are the things that are really good.
People love. Yeah, yeah. He hated Rafa Khan.
Yeah, yeah. It is funny to put his dedication on a movie that he did not like.
Yeah,
but you know, he didn't like a lot of it. He didn't like a lot of it, and yeah. Then you know, and then a lot of things happened. I mean. Next week we're going to talk about Generations. He never wanted Kirk and Picard to meet. A lot of what you see now are things he would never have wanted.
Yeah.
So we see we begin with Sulu's a captain on the Excelsior.
Yeah.
Something that comically he was really proud of
because he wanted to get the fuck away from Shatner.
Right, right. Which is funny because supposedly Shatner was like didn't want him to get the fake promotion and he was like, how dare you not let me get a promotion?
Yeah, like let one of these guys get a promotion.
But the movie is on the Enterprise. It's weird to be like, I want to move up in my fake military career.
Right.
I mean, they find a way to bring him into it.
Right, like they do a good job. It's not like, oh, he's off on the Excelsior and like he's like contractually in this movie.
Right, right.
Like, no, he plays a pretty solid part in this movie. He's got stuff to do.
And it leads to a really awesome sort of like fight scene at the end where
yes.
Two ships are firing on one ship. Like, you don't really see shit. You didn't, at that point, you didn't see shit like that in Trek.
No, you did not.
This is weird, but does Sulu seem like a good captain? He doesn't seem like a good captain to me.
He's a little, he seems like he got, there's definitely several parts where
he seems like
they're
kind
of questioning him.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, we're going to do it anyway.
Right.
It's like, well,
right.
Do you have senior officers? Like, shouldn't you conduct a meeting first?
It feels like he doesn't like care for his crew and his crew doesn't care for him. You know, you've got that very weird Christian Slater cameo.
Well, he was just a fan, and was like his mom, like part of the.
I think his mom was like casting director or something.
Yeah,
but what does it do for the film except pull you right on out of it? Because you're like, you hear his voice, and you're like, is that fucking Christian?
Is that Dean Cain?
Is that Christian Slater?
Yeah,
it'd be great if Dean Cain. It'd be great if Sulu like, all right, Christian Slater, close the door.
Yeah.
Like that, like Danny Trejo in that Muppets movie.
Oh my god,
he is Danny Trejo. Oh man, that's awesome.
So now, speaking of, while we're talking about, because this is a great spot to, and you can play at home, run to YouTube,
yeah,
and look up, just look up Sulu Excelsior flashback, and it's like the third video to come up. I'm gonna show Mike this right now, so we'll just use this as a cutting point if you're editing this. There was an episode of Star Trek Voyager where this was during a month where they were celebrating like, you know, what was it, like 25 years, 30 years of Star Trek or something like that. So each episode that was on the air did a little special something. So like DS9 famously did a thing where they went back in time to Trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah.
And Voyager, they did a thing where Lieutenant Tuvok reveals that he was on the Excelsior during the movie, during Six. And they had Sulu show up for the episode. And the whole episode takes place in Tuvok's mind. He mind melds up Janeway, and she's like helping him suss something out. But they're on the Excelsior, and they recreated the scene. This is an ad. But they recreated the scene from Star Trek Six.
Interesting.
Now, I have one question, and I feel like you're about to say it as well. Is that cool that they were able to do that, or if it was so close to the original footage,
right?
Why should they have just used the original footage?
They should have just used the original footage. I don't understand why you would do that at all. I mean, take the Trouble Tribbles example.
They just CGI'd
the characters into the original footage.
Right.
Why not do that?
I guess
I don't see the point of it.
I guess the answer would be because for the rest of the episode, like obviously, like you're seeing much more than just that one scene.
Uh-huh.
Like the whole episode takes place basically on the bridge there for most of it.
Okay.
But did you have to, you know, redo that whole scene?
I don't think you do. I think you could film the new stuff and just do your best to make it match.
Yeah.
It seemed like the exteriors are the same.
Oh yeah, the exterior, like the CGI stuff, was the same.
That's very odd. That's super odd. Damn. So we have so the plot of this movie is that due to, I don't know, mining without
license or something,
without proper protocol or whatever, a moon in the Klingon Empire explodes.
Yeah, the Klingon moon Praxis explodes, and now the Klingons basically are without very essential resources.
Right, and their air is polluted. So they have about 50 years left before life is not sustainable on their main planet, Kronos. So they've got 50 years to get the hell out of there. And this changes everything. And also, there's a military aspect to it, which is they spend most of their economy on the military. Right. And now they can't do that anymore. So now they're ready to talk peace.
Yeah.
And it's put very bluntly like that. Actually, Spock is the person who's like working to make this happen.
Yeah.
And it creates a conflict between him and Kirk.
Right, because Kirk is like, well, they killed my son.
Yeah. Like, I actually think that stuff is really good acting and really good drama. I really like them talking when it's just the two of them and they're like a whole table apart.
Yeah.
And he's like,
good staging, like the framework of like, we're miles apart on this, so we're going to stand on the very edge of this table.
Right. And he's like, they're dying. And he's like, let them die.
Yeah.
It shows the prejudice that Kirk has. Actually, I think the prejudice throughout the movie on the Klingons is good. Like, there's that one scene where the Klingon convoy comes to have dinner with the crew of the Enterprise, and then they leave, and then you see like two like nobody ensigns, like, ugh, do you smell them? Oh, they all look the same. Like, real crazy fucking racist shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's good because it sets Kirk and Spock apart, but it also gives Kirk someplace to grow, because by the end of it, he sort of turns all the way around, and he also feels like, and this is what more boomers should do, he feels like there isn't room for me anymore. Like, he sees fault.
Right, like, how could I live in a future where this version of me exists?
Right, he says, like, I didn't even, for a second, take the ambassador at his word that he wasn't pulling something.
Yeah.
It's interesting to watch this movie a second time after knowing who's in on the plot and not, because you realize that David Werner's character is completely forthright and not in the plot. So everything he's saying is true. He really wants to broker peace.
Yeah, and in fact, it's Kim Cattrall's character who really sets the whole thing off.
But it's interesting because it's different. It's some Klingons. It's Kim Cattrall's character for the Federation. It's also another captain named Cartwright.
Right.
And the Romulan ambassador.
Right. It's like the worst coalition.
Right, right.
And like, oh, it's the whole, like, we're not going to let these bad apples, like, define us.
And the idea that Klingons and Federation people are working together to make sure the peace doesn't happen is really wild. And one of the things that would happen is, you know, like, Starfleet, you know, besides its, like, supposed mission of, like, discovery and science, a lot of what it is functionally is military in this Cold War.
Right.
And, you know, when they're having that big meeting in the beginning, people are saying, like, so is this the end of Starfleet? We're not going to have Starfleet anymore? Like, are we going to lose our jobs? Are we going to lose our way of life?
Right. What are we going to fight now?
Right. It's really interesting that some people seem to really be against it, not specifically because of their prejudice, but because they don't want the world to change.
Right. And you see that even in like Next Generation, where, I mean, I guess they would have done this anyway, but it only shines a bigger light on the fact that like the Enterprise is a vessel of exploration.
Yeah.
It's not there to like go and like, you know, fight Klingons and right. have wars.
Right, right. Yeah, Kirk has that line. He goes, how on earth can history get past people like me?
Right.
Which is, I think, again, it's, it, this only, movie only hits boomers, all, it hit, I know. This movie hits all the right notes.
Yeah.
And everything's in the right place. Like, the last movie, Part 5, we talked about how the comedy was in all the wrong places and just was just, like, way out there and just, like, there'd be a comedy button on a scene that was not comedic at all. Yeah,
like,
they're about to meet
God and, like, Uhura's doing a fan dance.
Yeah, and like, Scotty, like, does a fucking America's Funniest Home Videos, like, walks into a beam and hits himself in the head. Like, this movie, like, the humor actually, I think, works and it's used correctly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so they're supposed to broker peace. They're like, okay, well, since Captain Kirk, since you're famously someone who fucking hates Klingons, you're going to be the olive branch.
Right.
So you have to, on the Enterprise, have the Klingon ambassador and his, you know, envoy come, and you're going to have dinner with them and you're going to sit down. And that's a very good dramatic scene.
You're like, right, because there's like tension there.
Yeah, you got fucking...
Because they all know why they're there.
Right, and some of them are for it. Some of them are like, you know, like... the what's the name of the Klingon? Oh, Gorkon is the
yeah, Chancellor Gorkon.
Yeah, he's the Klingon ambassador, and he's the one who's like, let's do a toast to the undiscovered country, which is the future, mm-hmm. which is a line from Hamlet.
Yeah,
oh, Shakespeare,
you love Shakespeare.
Shakespeare is to this movie what Moby Dick is to Wrath of Khan.
Yes,
just tons and tons and tons of Shakespeare quotes.
Even like his final line is like, to be or not to be.
I know he's just nonstop quoting Shakespeare.
So they got Shakespeare on Klingon?
Right. Well, he has a line where he's like, oh, you have to read Shakespeare in the original Klingon.
Oh, yeah.
He's
swiveling. My favorite is like he's swiveling around in his fucking chair. He's like, release the dogs of war. Like,
right, right. He's having a great time. But then you've got some people that are like having problems at the dinner. Like you have the ambassador's daughter who... Kirk says something. Oh no, no, the they're all like quoting things, and then the character played by Christopher Plummer, General Chang.
Yeah,
he says like, "Oh, we need the because one of the Klingons says like, we know what's gonna happen. Our culture is gonna be destroyed. We're not gonna have a culture anymore." And then he says something like, "Oh, we just need breathing room or something," which is similar to something Hitler said.
Yeah,
and Kirk is like, "Adolf Hitler, 1938." And everyone's like, ooh. And then the ambassador's daughter is like, oh, he says something like, you know, we don't want to alienate mankind. And she's like, listen to what you say, alienate mankind. You don't even realize how racist you are, which is true to them. You know what I mean? Like,
right. But like, they're all being racist.
Right. Right. They're all being racist, but some are being positive. Some are like seeing is like, this is the future. Like Scotty too is like, he's very positive about it. It's really interesting. Cause you see the differences at one point when the Klingons are coming, Chekhov says, guess who's coming to dinner, which is
right. Sidney Poitier.
Right. Which is a famous, movie where Sidney Poitier plays the black boyfriend of a white girl who comes to dinner.
Although modern audience might know it from Guess Who?
The Bernie Mac joint.
Bernie Mac, Ashton Kutcher movie.
Well, talk about incredible remakes, huh? That was one that, well, they really did it. They really did it justice. It's
like, you guys did it. You flipped a very poignant commentary on racism into well, what about white people?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, it's written by your dumb uncle.
Yeah.
What about white people goes to a black family? Yeah, how about that?
Mm, how about that?
Originally, that line was written for Uhura, but Nichelle Nichols was like, no, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, I bet she didn't say that.
Yeah, so they gave it to fucking... It is funny how much, if you read the trivia, how often like lines are interchangeable between the other crew members.
Well, we'll get to that when we get to Generation.
I know.
Scene.
Yeah, I know. They have the little dinner. They go back to the ship, and then seemingly the Enterprise is firing torpedoes at the Klingon ship, and the right. Klingons are like, "Hey, what the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah, and then like, and Kirk they're is not, like, "Hey, what the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah, Kirk is like, "What's going on? Where's this coming from?" You know, hail them, and they're like, "Oh, you have no fucking shame, Kirk." And he's like, "I didn't mean that. This isn't happening." And they're all freaking out, and then Kirk is like, "Tell them we surrender." And tell him we're gonna come on board and we're unarmed. So him and Bones go and try to save the. Well, first they show up. The Klingon's like, "What are you out of fucking mind? Showing up here?" And yeah. then they're like, "No, we don't know what's going on. We want to save the ambassador." And I think that's a very good drama here. Like when David Warner dies and he calls the captain to him and he whispers in his ear, "Like, don't let it end like this." There's CG in this movie, some good, some bad. The Klingon blood doesn't hold up very well, but at the time you could tell they really thought it was awesome.
Oh, they thought it was fucking bees.
It is right in your face.
It's so in your face, it's almost like when you watch a 3D movie without the glasses,
yeah.
like the 2D version of the 3D yeah. movie, and it, like the effects are like right over the film.
Right, and it looks... I can only describe the special effects as Ivan Ooze.
it's very like grape jelly. It's not really blood.
Yeah, it's Ivan Ooze.
It's Nick Yak is what it is.
Right. So that leads to Kirk and Bones are arrested. And then the trial, another good... That's the thing. Like, this movie gets... And we could compare this to the next movie we're going to talk about, Generations, where it doesn't know how to bridge thoughtfulness and action.
Yeah.
This movie bridges like interesting action and like interesting Star Trek like thoughtfulness and like good dialogue, because then the trial scene is really good.
Yeah.
And it looks very cool too, like the way they're like...
Oh, because they're like down below in a big hole.
And yeah. Like... And then they're brought up and they're like... It's like the Klingons are all around them and they're chanting and stuff, and they do something really interesting, which you don't normally see in sci-fi movies, which is... Usually movies don't want to call attention to the fact that something is being translated. Like, we'll see a movie that takes place in Germany, but if it's made in America, everyone's speaking English.
Right.
And they're not going to call attention to it. You just know in your mind, like, this is supposed to be German. In this movie, you see them begin to speak in Klingon, and Bones and Kirk are holding these little, like, translators right. to their yeah. ears, and then you just see Christopher Plummer start speaking in English. Mm-hmm. It's a weird... It's a stylistic choice. It's very interesting because it's like to call attention to it is unusual, I think.
Yeah.
And that's where we have Worf's, I don't know, uncle, granddad. I don't know who
yeah,
that Worf is.
Yeah, something like that. Michael Dorn wanted a payday.
Yeah, yeah, and they're like, and it creates more connective tissue, I guess.
Yeah.
And he's a good, again, he's a good Klingon, right? Because he's the defense.
Yes.
Although he's not putting up a great defense.
No.
He's like, come on, guys. No. Come on. Well, Christopher Plummer is killing it. He even brings up, because they were all drinking Romulan wine, and he brings up, like, he was like, so, Dr. McCoy, were you drunk during this? Was he alive when you started operating on him? He's like, did your hand shake? It's pretty fucked up. Then he says something about Kirk, which is 100% true, which I thought was really funny. I wrote it down. What does he say? His record shows him to be an insubordinate, unprincipled, career-minded opportunist with a history of violating the chain of command whenever it suited him.
Yeah,
100%, he's correct.
That has become a trope in Star Trek, too, where, like, every so often someone will have almost like a fourth wall-breaking moment where they'll be like, oh, yo, Picard, you're the guy who went off and did that fucking thing and, like,
yeah, yeah.
you know, did this and blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, no, you're not wrong.
Right. He's 100% correct. I mean, if there's anything you see in these movies is Kirk constantly disobeying orders. And he even brings up, like, you were an admiral and then you were demoted back to captain.
Yeah.
So instead of being sentenced to death, as a way of, like, harboring good faith for the upcoming peace talks, they're like, we'll just give you life in like a prison planet where you
frozen
have to mine
prison colony.
Yeah, I like that judge, by the way. He was super old Klingon. He had like a metal hand and yeah. like a metal ball that he like would clang and sparks would come out of it. That was like the gavel. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed a fun Klingon. And yeah, so now we're in jail. You have Amon in it, who was a supermodel and famously David Bowie's wife for a while. And the fact that you have like the most beautiful woman in the world, like sharing a kiss with fat, bloated old Shatner. And like they like really go for it. It's like yeah. you can see their tongues move. It's really gross. it's ridiculous. It's
not fun. Don't bring the kids.
It's as ridiculous as the fan dance from the last movie.
Oh, God.
Of like, come on, guys. Although I think Bones has a funny reaction to it, which is very fourth wall breaking, where he's like, what is with you? Like, why do you always find a way to kiss a lady on our mission?
It's like we're in prison, Jim.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's the planet is like an ice planet, and down in the mines is where they'll work. And there's nothing really keeping them there. There's no like armed guards or anything. It's just being on the surface of the planet will kill you in like 15 seconds. Like they bring up a guy who I guess disobeyed something, and he's like naked, and they throw him, and he dies like instantly.
Yeah.
And they're like, the only thing is you can't beam from it, I think.
Yeah.
But before they go to trial, actually before they even go on the ship, Spock like slaps the back of Kirk's shoulder and like puts some sort of tracker on him, which I watched it again today. You could see it during the trial scene. You could see very clearly he has a thing on his back. So it's basically like
good thing they didn't, you know, take their clothes and give them new ones.
Right. Good thing. Yeah. Good. A lot of things. Good thing Spock is just like, he's going to break out. But Spock even says, like, if I know the captain, he's already planning his escape, which is like, okay. So they get there. That's all fun. Whenever it's just Bones and Kirk, it's fun. They get into fights.
Yeah, and then eventually Amon is like, I'll get you out of here. Like, let's do it.
Thank God they meet her.
Yeah.
Although we do find out that it's like a plan to kill them because they do want them dead. The conspirators want them dead. They don't want them in prison. Is this a plot hole? How then, if they then are going to assassinate the new chancellor, the daughter, the old ambassador's daughter, if they plan on assassinating her during the peace talks, which are going to be held at a secret location to be determined later, wouldn't that exonerate Kirk and Bones? Like, once the new ambassador.
I guess their thought is it wouldn't matter because like they just want to get the job done.
I guess. We have a kick him in the balls joke.
Yep.
Kirk is fighting this big blue guy, and he kicks him in the knees, and he like does like a fucking 90s I got kicked in the balls take.
Mm-hmm.
And Iman is like, not everyone keeps their generals in the same place. And he's like, you want to tell me something about you? Just like, boys, cool it down. Cool it down, everybody. This woman, this is a Stone Cold 10 who's way younger than you.
Yeah.
Everything about this is weird. And then there's an interesting dialogue scene between Kirk and Bones at night when they're in the prison bunks. And he's just like, that's when Kirk's beginning to realize like what the plot is and that he was wrong.
Yeah.
So I do like that it leaves Kirk in an interesting place. He has a real character arc. And so does, in some way, Spock, because Spock regrets not really. Basically, in the beginning, Spock volunteers Kirk to do this without telling him.
Yeah.
So he, once they're in jail, he's like, he feels bad, like, this is my fault. And then he also feels bad at the end because. Valeris ends up being bad.
Right. And Spock's arc during this time is that he's got a cool, he's trying to figure out the mystery.
Right.
He's back on the ship. He's like rooting around the kitchen. He's looking for clues.
They're looking for the boots, right?
Like, right. The magnetic boots.
Yeah, because when the Klingon ship was attacked, the gravity was disrupted and, two people dressed in Starfleet uniforms or Starfleet, space uniforms.
Yeah.
With gravity boots, like walk through, and that's how they assassinate people. So they're like, okay, well, there's no way they could have got rid of the boots. So you find the boots, we'll find the culprits. And then they find the boots, right? They find the boots, and then they're like, oh, we need to find the clothes that have the blood on it.
Right.
And when they find that, they find them murdered. So
that's like, okay, well, now who did this?
Right. And it's interesting. I don't know if we knew this already or I forgot it, but they're murdered because if you fire a phaser inside the ship, an alarm will go off. So they're killed by phaser set to stun, but close proximity.
Yeah.
So stun will kill you if it's like
right up to you.
Yeah. They figure out that a bird of prey, which typically can't fire when they're cloaked, must have been what fired, and they were just underneath the ship. Which I kind of like when you see advancements like that. Like, I like in The Last Jedi when the bad guys have the ability to track through hyperspace, which is something that they never could do before. So Amon helps them get out. Amon, we find out, is a shapeshifter. She becomes a hairy guy that looks a lot like Karg from Masters of the Universe. she looks like Beast Man in the Masters of the Universe movie.
Yes.
And then they're like, Kirk punches her. It's fun to punch a lady. And he's like, you set us up. None of this makes sense. And then she's like, oh, they were going to give me a full pardon for bringing you out here.
Yeah.
And then there's a fun moment where the person who's like running the prison is like, well, since you're about to die, I'll tell you the whole plot. And he looks like he's like in a monologue, but then they're beamed up because Spock is waiting for them. And then we're basically there. We have to find where the special talk is going to be. That's another way that Sulu comes in.
Right.
Because Sulu knows what the talk's going to be. They get there and they're going to go and they're going to stop. They're going to save Kurtwood Smith.
Yeah.
Who is Kurtwood Smith again?
He's the bad guy in RoboCop.
No. But who is he in this? He's
the president of the Federation.
Okay. What species is he? Because at first I thought he was a Klingon, but he's not a Klingon, obviously.
I don't know. Okay. Because they gave him like this Fu Manchu.
Yeah, because like, which Klingons have too.
Right.
I was confused at first. Yeah. They show up. All the conspirators are there. They sort of grab them. Kirk jumps on the president so he doesn't get shot. Scotty kills the sharpshooter and he falls out a window. And then basically it's our climax, and the new ambassador's like, what's going on here? And he's like, the future. People are like, you feel like in this moment you should be really, forget the metaphor for right now.
Right.
Kirk really should be like, okay, that guy was trying to assassinate. This guy actually is the assassin, and he framed me and Bones, but he's like, yeah. Let me tell you what's going on here.
Yeah, the future is happening, sir.
Yeah. People are think that ideas change will changing. Be the end of history.
Yeah, the winds of change are right. Like, tell me what's going on.
I need some specifics, sir. But
but before that, there's a really good, like, almost like submarine style chase.
Right. Yes, that's true. Right. Yeah. Talk about that.
Where that's the one where he's like fire.
Right. Right. That's where Sulu helps them.
Yes, because then, like, once they figure out where he is. Like, the both of them, like, double team him.
Yeah, they realize that if they can, they have, I don't remember when this is set up, but they have some sort of equipment that can detect gas or whatever. Yeah. So they're like, let's put this into a torpedo and it will shoot it. And even though they're cloaked, it'll find, like, what Uhura calls their tailpipe. You know what I mean? In the typical Star Trek, we're going to use 20th century terms to make the audience understand.
Yeah, sometimes they go overboard with that. Like, I was watching an episode of, I think, Voyager a while back, where they discover, I'm not even going to get into it because it would take too long to explain, but they discover a 1940s truck.
Yeah.
And one of the characters goes, oh, what's this? And he's like, oh, that's what I guess they used to call a key in the ignition.
Yeah.
Like, really? You don't know what a fucking key is? Yeah.
There's a moment earlier in this film where Kirk is like, why me? And Spock goes, as they say, only Nixon could go to China, which was during the Cold War.
Yeah.
Nixon went and spoke in China, and Nixon was such a violently anti-communist guy that it was like the only way they would this would work is if you had somebody who was clearly against, like, basically, this is why Kirk was picked. Because everyone knows you fucking hate Klingons.
Yeah.
So you're the guy who's got to do it. There's also a weird moment, by the way. I don't know if you caught this. Where Spock implies that Sherlock Holmes is A, a real person, and B, a descendant of him. At some point, he's like, as a a descendant once said, like, when all, you know, it's that famous quote about the improbable and the impossible.
What's left is the truth. Left is, and it's like, however improbable must be.
It's like, what do you say? Like, so Sherlock Holmes is a Vulcan? What are you saying?
Yeah, I don't
get what we're saying here.
Well, what we're saying is this is a great movie. You should go see it.
It is absolutely a great movie.
If you like Wrath of Khan, definitely run out to see this. If you
have. Yeah, this is a really good one. This is a really good one. It ends with, we should say the whole movie, they're like, we're close to retirement. They're Danny Glovering the whole movie. They're like, we're close to retirement. We got 3 months before we stand down. And then at the end, they're all on the bridge again, and the day's been saved. And Uhura's like, the Starfleet's telling us to bring in the ship now.
He's like, fuck that. this thing to Tijuana, baby.
He says, what is it? I wrote it down. He says, second star to the right and straight on till morning, which is, if you remember, Peter Pan, that's how you get to Never Never Land.
Yeah.
Every one of these movies has had the theme of we're getting old and how do we deal with it. It's literally the entire series.
Yeah.
But this one is sort of the end of it, although it pops up again in Generations a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there.
And then it does something that later on Endgame would come to rip off, which is it has the signature for the credits. It has the signatures of all the main cast.
Yeah.
Like actually signing their signature, which is a nice,
like, we're signing off on this, on closing out this franchise.
And that's yeah, it's really fucking good. So I sent you, Vin, since we're at the end here, let's rank our six of the original cast movies. Worst to best. What do you got?
Okay. Worst to best. My notes here. All right. Worst to best. Search for Spock is my worst.
Interesting.
Next one is Final Frontier.
Okay.
I think some people would switch those, but...
Yeah.
To me, I look at the whole entertainment value of something.
Yes.
So I think, you can obviously make the case that Final Frontier is a worse movie.
Yeah.
On every level.
Yeah.
More entertaining than Search for Spock? I think so. Okay. Search for Spock, I think, was just kind of like...
It's kind of boring more than anything.
Yeah, it's just kind of middling. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, but it's not great. And I would rather have a movie that has, like, bad things that are interesting. Voyage Home.
Okay.
Then Motion Picture, Wrath of Khan, and Undiscovered Country.
So you have Undiscovered Country as your number one.
Yes.
Why do you prefer that to Wrath of Khan?
I think it does a lot of stuff that Wrath of Khan does very well.
Yeah.
But I think I like the higher stakes and like how it's tied into the Star Trek mythos a bit more with all the Klingon stuff.
Yeah.
Like if you wanted a movie that like was like a big Star Trek, like this is a Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
And we're amping up the stakes and you're going to get all your favorites in here.
Yeah.
You can't do much better than six because you've got the Klingons. You've got big changes for
the whole world that they've established in this universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a little bit better paced than Rafa. I love Wrath of Khan.
Here's where I'm going to argue you, and I'll read mine in a second. I would say that this movie goes, but once they come back from the prison planet, mm-hmm. I feel like it loses a little bit of its steam.
Okay.
Whereas I think Wrath of Khan just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. So I'd say that Wrath of Khan is better. But here's my ranking. For worst, I have The Final Frontier. I do see that as worse than Search for Spock. My next worst is Search for Spock. Then I have The Voyage Home, which is a movie I like.
Yeah.
Now we're in movies I like. Then above that, I have The Motion Picture. I have a lot of affinity for The Motion Picture. Then I have Undiscovered Country at number two. And then number one, Wrath of Khan. So similar lists.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people would put The Motion Picture maybe as their worst or towards the bottom. I do see how it doesn't fit in with a lot of these other movies because it is humorless and very, very self-important. But
there's good stuff in it, though.
Yeah, and as much as we could like make fun of Gene Roddenberry, I do kind of like that it's a It's a straight dose. It's a hard dose of Roddenberry. It's like the most. Right. It's probably his.
Like, if you want the glimpse of what
he wanted,
these six movies could have been.
You're right.
That's it. Like, the, right. Even down to like the uniforms being very utilitarian.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, right. Design in that first movie is like the ship design stuff is fine. I think the costume design is not great.
I think it's interesting. I do prefer like the later suits, the maroon suits, but it's got a weird Logan's Run to it. It's weird because the first movie is not that long after the show. So it's like you look at like part one to part six and they age a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie series, six movies is a lot. Like the movie series really, it's an interesting smorgasbord.
Yeah, like that is a lot to do six mainline movies in a decade.
It did the thing that few other franchises have done, which is go from a successful TV series to a successful film series.
Mm.
Right? There's Star Trek, there's Mission Impossible, which might be the best example of it, because Mission Impossible was a popular show at the time, but no one ever talks about it now. But it translated into...
That's more of an adaptation, though, right? It's not like a straight sequel.
Well, spoiler alert, the villain, the protagonist of the TV show ends up being the villain in the first film.
Oh, same actor?
No, same actor. The actor refused to do it.
Okay, see, now, I don't know. I don't know if I can count that, though.
Why?
I don't know. I feel like you've got to have the same actor. Like
it's the same character, though. It's the same character, the same name. I mean, it was meant to be a surprise that the protagonist of the show is the villain.
Yeah, but doesn't it like lack a little bit of a punch if like at the end of the movie they're like this guy who you don't recognize because he's not the original character.
Well, he's a cloaked villain and then he takes his mask off and it's him. He's in the whole thing as like, oh, there's the character from the show, just as like the boss to Tom Cruise's new character.
Aye.
And then at the end, you realize he's behind it.
Well, full disclosure, I've never seen any of the Mission Impossible movies. So.
I've only seen like the first two, but people say they're incredible, and they've up to like 10 great. Or something. It's been going on for over 20 years.
Yeah, there's one that came out this year.
Yeah, there's another one I think is supposed to be the last one.
Right, because it's like a two-parter.
They all haven't seen stunts in them.
Tom Cruise like doing a lot of his own stunts.
Yeah, bananas. Well, Vin, that's it for our trek through the original series cast movies. We're going to come back next week for a... I'd say that Generations is the first next-gen movie rather than the last... other than that little beginning. So you can listen to... Vin, where are the people going to find you?
You can follow me on Twitter, at MightyVin. Follow me over on Instagram, at VinForteNYC. Follow my Substack over on VinForte.substack.com. Follow all the podcasts I do. I think you can just go to my link tree to get all the links.
What do you do over on the Substack?
Some brains. I put a new article up today.
I've been thinking about doing something like that.
Dude, there's a start. I put a new Star Trek article up today. Oh, well,
people, if that's not a tease, I don't know what it is.
It's the time I do a whole article on looking back on one of the Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's first acting roles
as a
Star Trek Voyager.
Okay, who'd he play?
He played a nameless wrestler.
Fantastic. All right, everybody. That's where you can find Vin. This is PCMC. We come out every Wednesday throughout all time. I'm Mike Maggiore. I was here with Vin Forte. We end every episode by saying...
Go bye-bye.